Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:31, and that is Pacific Summer Time on August 30th, and today is a Tuesday. And it's been a rather eventful day in stock markets generally. Not least, Japan here was down very slightly on the rather impressive performance yesterday. But the yen is weaker today by a full yen and a bit of change, so it's up to 103 to the dollar. Or the dollar is up to 103 against the yen, more correctly. And that's likely to add an additional tailwind to the Nikkei. And it is increasingly close to breaking that progression of lower rally highs. And we've mentioned the 17,000 level as being rather key on a number of occasions. And of course, it comes in the background of Kuroda today denying that Japan was anywhere close to helicopter money, and yet there is still rampant speculation that Japan will be the first country to embark on that particular menu item from the monetary policy list. Then the other big move in Asia today was in India, where the Modi government permitted that back pay to be paid out to government workers, and that represents a potential source of consumer spending, and the domestic economy is still dominant within the weightings of what's important for the Indian market. So you had upper dynamics for the Sensex, the Nifty, and the banking sector. And interestingly, Europe was pretty much universally in positive territory, with the exception of the FTSE 100. And the DAX was up 1%. The Italian index was up over 1%, actually almost 1.5%. So part of the reason for that is the euro was a little weaker. And we continued, and I think something that we saw in Japan from a number of years ago is an inverse relationship between the stock market and the currency. And we also saw that in Europe last year when the euro was devaluing, the eurozone stock markets really did perform very well in nominal terms. So any additional weakness in the euro is translating into upside for some of those eurozone stock markets. But when we look at at Wall Street, then news that the EU wants to fine Apple upwards of $14 billion has obviously weighed on sentiment. Now, it's an entirely different question as to whether Apple will ever have to actually pay that, because it's going to play out in the courts, and that it might be 5 years before the case is ever heard at the European Court of Justice. But it's a nasty turn of events, because it is outright rent-seeking on the part of the EU. And the interest of equanimity, then the US has got a record of firing off fines to European companies, and not least BP and HSBC, and even Credit Suisse. And I suspect that in the aftermath of this particular decision, Volkswagen must be rather nervous, considering just how exposed they are to potential fines from the US. And then that also comes on the back of news that the French are attempting to back out of the trade deal being negotiated between the US and the EU, saying that it is essentially dead in the water. And this is also smells of protectionism, but it also it does raise some very important questions about just how sovereign any nation is when it is within the EU. And that is particularly the case for Ireland, which has benefited enormously from its 12.5% corporate tax rate. And whether it is in the realm of possibilities that Belgium, perhaps more accurately Brussels, can tell them how to fix their corporate tax rates. Because realistically, is there any particular reason that any Silicon Valley company needs to site its European headquarters in Europe, other than and that whether that has to be in Ireland rather than anywhere else, in the absence of the 12.5% corporate tax rate. I suspect it would be a much bigger question if that were not indeed the case. So Ireland has got some very large questions to ask. And for one of the most pro-Euro countries around, then there is the potential that if there is a heavy-handed approach taken to Ireland's sovereign affairs, that sentiment could sour, and sour pretty quickly, and not least because the country is still confined within the fiscal constraints of Euro membership, as well as now being a net contributor to the EU, having benefited from being a net acceptor of Eurozone funds or European funds for much of its membership. So there really is a lot happening on the political front. When we look at, and I've posted a chart today of the velocity of money, and I think it is particularly relevant because not only is it at a new all-time low from that last iteration in late June, but it's accelerating lower. And very classical economics would, and really you look at 101 central banking. What is the central bank's actual job? And their job is, in very simple terms, to make sure there is enough of money in the system to promote economic growth. And if the velocity of money is accelerating lower, then the central bank has to run easy monetary policy in order to pump more money in to ensure that there is the potential for economic growth. But of course, their problem is that some of the main reasons that the velocity of money is contracting so quickly are really outside of the central bank's ability to influence, because the disintermediation of the internet is not something that the central bank can change. And there is no coincidence that the velocity of money has been contracting since 1997, which is really when the internet hit its critical capacity. And there's unlikely to be any change to that, because you just have to look at how much of your own spending, how much of your own life it takes place online. And for upcoming generations, it is going to be even more than for the generations of people listening to this audio. And I look at my children and how much of their life is dominated by what is online. Therefore, we can anticipate that velocity of money is going to contract. It makes the argument for looser fiscal policy rather than looser monetary policy more coherent. Obviously, that is not a conventional way of viewing the issue, but if you put more money in people's pockets, then the chances of them going out and spending it certainly improve, rather than them having to go and borrow it if you have loose monetary policy. We are at a very interesting juncture, because there is no argument that very loose monetary policy in response to the declining velocity of money has created dislocations in both the bonds and the stock markets. And that also means that the Fed has to tread very carefully indeed, because having created these distortions adopting a classical response to an unconventional set of situations rather than adopting more of an unconventional approach to an unconventional problem, then they have created these dislocations. And if they're too aggressive in raising interest rates, there is a risk that they will foment the conditions for a recession. And I think the Fed is perfectly cognizant of the risks. So they are going to be very cautious. And one interest rate hike a year, I think, does fall into the realm of being very cautious. When we look at the Dow or the S&P, then, it has been really rather inert. And then this is a gradual reversion back to the mean following the breakout that we had 6 weeks ago. But just like we're seeing in the precious metals, when you get a breakout and then you get a pause in consolidation, then quite often the latter part of the consolidation can happen quickly, and it can pull back sharply to the region of the moving average. Now, for Wall Street, that's not very far away. It's less than 5%. But we've had a much deeper pullback in some of the precious metals, where they had surged higher, then they had gone sideways for a reasonable amount of time, more than a month, but now are pulling back more sharply. And that really does question the resolve of the bulls in this kind of environment, because prices are pulling back rather quickly. So gold was down 12 today, and it's back testing the 1300 level. It's closing out today around 1310. And silver is back down around the 1850 area, and it's closing out around 1857. And platinum was down $22. It's back towards this 1050 area. And these are now rapidly closing their respective overextensions relative to the trend mean. And gold shares, which had been many of them are still up over 100% this year, despite the fact that they have pulled back very sharply over the last 2 weeks, they're also rapidly unwinding their respective overbought conditions relative to the MA. Personally, I think that this is the first big consolidation following what was a clear break of the medium-term downtrends. But there isn't a great deal of evidence yet to confirm that the low has been found. And personally, I'm waiting for the first clear upward dynamic to initiate long positions. But I am definitely looking to initiate long positions rather than short the market. I think it would be very unusual indeed if this, following such a very large break of a medium-term downtrend, that this was over. But we will obviously see how it plays out. And the majority of bonds today were in negative territory, but not in a dynamic fashion. And the dollar index is up to 96 now. It was up about a half a point in here today. And generally, it was a strong dollar day and a weak every other currency day, but most particularly against the yen. But the pound has been giving up some of last week's gains. This week it was down about 30 ticks in here today, but it's still holding around this 130 area, to the extent that people are not willing to bet against the dollar when you've had slightly more hawkish talk coming out of the Fed. And there is, of course, the point that we are coming into September, so people are coming back from holiday, starting to look around and think about what is it that is likely to go up from here, and thinking about what is it they're going to do with their money for the last quarter of the year. And they're being presented with by and large consolidations, but not clear breaks of trends. I think what we are, there is the uncertainty of what exactly is it the Fed is going to do. But if they don't move in September, it's very unlikely they're going to do anything before December. And we could see asset prices appreciate from there, because then that would remove some of the upward pressure on the dollar. And oil prices were also a little bit weaker in here today. And I think, when you look at where we are, and that prices had got up towards 50 and then pulled back sharply and then got all the way back up towards 50, and are easing from that level once more. Well, this is continuing to look like the right-hand extension following a type 2 bottom that we've talked about for much of the last month. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.